Welcome to El Telejón's La Liga Weekly. Spain set up a classic Euro semi-final against Italy, but please, please don't say masterminded by Luis Enrique. Switzerland scored an own goal. They had a man sent off and Spain only got through after what was the worst penalty shootout since they realised that practising was a good idea. It took until the 90th minute in the fifth game before the best midfielder in La Liga in this past season actually played in midfield, and they ended up with Thiago playing at right back. Terry, have you heard of the acronym NEET, N-E-E-T? It stands for Not in Employment, Education or Training. We'll be discussing what benefits Lionel Messi and his family can apply for now. Do ugly mansions qualify for housing benefit payments in Spain? And an offer from a bloke who says, we can't pay you just yet, but if you start work now, free uniform provided, and we'll get you some money as soon as we can free up a little bit of cash. So it turns out Roberto Soldado can get a two-year contract to play in La Liga, and Lionel Messi can't. The latest on the great man's contract, and we'll figure out whether Sergio Ramos can get himself a job as well, otherwise you'll see Messi in the dole queue at the start of next season. Terry has been working. Terry, you've two days gameful employment, but how was Barcelona? How was the experience?
Oh, dreadful. My work situation was fine. It was great. It was good to see the people I work with again. It's been 16 months since I've been allowed to travel to Barcelona. So I was working with Gabriel Mendieta, Pete Jensen, Semra Hunter for the day. And Albert Ferrer was working the day before, so they didn't get to see Albert. We did some promotional stuff, which was promotional stuff before the season starts. And it was a kind of amalgamation of different American quiz shows.
All right.
Basically. So it was a
am I going to enjoy this? Or am I?
We had a bit of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where you could phone a friend. We had the buzzers on the table. Come on down, the price is right. There's a bit of everything. And fortunately for me, they gave me what they thought was a tricky one. And basically, I went to Barcelona to do a spelling contest. So I had to do various spellings of awkward players' names, awkward pronunciation names. And I nailed it. So I think they forget, John, that we write down these awkward names hundreds of times a season.
Yes.
Perhaps I haven't done as much recently because when we commentate, we write down these names and we write them down phonetically and we write them down. You know, we've done the recent World Cup qualifiers and international friendlies. Some of those names are pretty tricky. But the La Liga names, they could throw anything that they'd like at me and I would have been fine with it. But to their surprise, it was like Youssef En-Nesyri, doddle. Brasalico, doddle. Can you name the Atletico? Can you spell the Atletico Madrid? I was hoping it was going to be Coke, but it wasn't. It was Brasalico. Youssef En-Nesyri, Chukwueze, which, funny enough, they said wrong. And I had to prove that I was right and they had the wrong answer. So Gaze helped me out on that one. We'd already said that if anything happened, Gaze was going to be the adjudicator. And when I spelled Chukwueze,
C-H-U-K-W-U-E-Z-E.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But they missed out the U.
Right, okay. Right.
They tried to claim there wasn't a U in there. We had to show them, and Gaze stop recording and show him on his phone that no, he knows everything, Gaze said. Don't challenge him. And they went, oh, sorry, don't do that again. So it was good fun, really was. But the travelling side of it is horrendous. Mm. It really is. Filling in the paperwork, getting into Spain, it was relatively easy. As long as you had the right paperwork, they accepted double vaccinations. I got a barcode to show that I'd done the paperwork and proved that. So that was plain sailing coming back. Again, it's if you got the right paperwork, it's okay. But there's a lot of paperwork. Mm. Test before I flew, a test on day two, which is tomorrow, a test on day eight, or you can pay extra, which baffles me how you can pay extra to be early release on day five if you've got another 80, 90 quid to spend on a test.
Well, what we know is that COVID does discriminate in favour of rich people, Terry. I wouldn't count myself as rich.
And I had principle. I wasn't going to do it. I had principle. And I thought, no. And already I'm only on day one. I've booked a day five. I've given up. I can't bear the thought of that extra 5 days, but it just seems bonkers that you can pay money and I still have to do the day eight test as well. So God knows. So it's the stuff you have to carry around and the stuff you have to show on your phone and in Barcelona, I must admit, there was even walking around the streets, people were wearing their masks out in the open. It was hot, very hot. As the day went on, it became hotter and hotter, of course, and you've still got this mask on everywhere you go. So it was great to be working again. But an example, I haven't been tested for COVID yet throughout, but I'm now doing 4 tests in a week, having had both my vaccinations. So it's everything needs to be resolved and made more straightforward.
The InVision Patreons will notice I'm wearing my natty Euro 2020 branded top because I went to Wembley. Obviously, I mentioned that. I've got to say it was brilliant. So we're recording this Saturday. England haven't played, so it's all three Lions. Don't take me home at the moment. It'll be if England lose to Ukraine, that won't be the mood. It'll all be bitter recriminations and you know, angry, but Southgate and all of that. But at the moment, we're all loving it, obviously, in England. It was brilliant, and it was so much better than Hampden Park because you had to show your COVID status. So I've got my double vaccine, so. You showed that on your phone. My son came with us, so he had to have done just one test, though, just one lateral flow test, which as long as it's within the time frame. So we got in. Yeah. And then you were allowed to, the bars were open, so you could eat, you know, I had a beer with my mates. He had a Coke. And where compared to in Scotland, where
Coke? Yeah. Did you check that with Ronaldo? Giving your children Coke?
Good point. See, Ronaldo would love Hampden Park because you're only allowed to drink water, nothing but, you know, water, sit 3 seats apart from anyone, don't talk to anyone. So I'd much rather demonstrate my status and be allowed to talk to my friends, basically, than not. Anyway, yes, I know it's tough. This, you know, we're unprecedented times, as the cliche says, and it's hard to pick a perfect way through. But there we are.
The one last thing I would say is, can people start having a bit of forward planning at the airport? Airports are not my favourite place in the world. People lose their mind, don't they? So they walk up to a boarding gate. And they act surprised when they're asked for a boarding pass. And then they spend 10 minutes looking for paperwork swiping through things on their phones.
Yeah. Like Cristiano Ronaldo when he's missed a free kick. Is that astonished every time? You can't still be a surprise, mate. It happens 400 times this in the last 3 years.
I saw 3 people ejected from boarding the plane because they're literally, one person had an ID card. That was all they had. no paperwork, nothing whatsoever, and expected to get on a flight from Barcelona to London with a backpack on and nothing. 10 minutes explaining to her that, no, this is, where's your passenger locator form? You need more than that. So please, if people are travelling, listen to this podcast, be a little bit of a chavvy before you get to the boarding gate and sort of have that next pass. Think about the next thing you've got to do rather than get there and go around. Boarding pass. Yeah, sorry.
let's do Spain, shall we? I thought Switzerland would be a tricky game for them. No disrespect to Switzerland, as we say in football, because they're perfectly entitled to play that way. They scored the early own goal. So almost everything fell for Spain, didn't it? And then the red card, which is a modern red card. I wouldn't want that to be a red card, but it is. So as soon as he did it, I thought, he's going to send him off here. And he did.
Yeah.
So everything fell for Spain, but they still made heavy weather of it, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think I probably will be critical of Spain in this game, but I think we have to bear in mind France got knocked out by Switzerland. And we've seen in this competition there are I know it's a cliche, but there aren't any easy games. I mean, it's everybody is fiercely competitive. They're very well organised. I think that the teams that got knocked out the group stages were the weakest ones, obviously. And I think from then on, it's every game is going to be competitive, and that applies to England's game against Ukraine. So I think that we have to bear that in mind, that this was never going to be an easy fixture for Spain. But I take your point, getting the early lead, which then meant that Switzerland had to try and approach it differently. You didn't have to go berserk when you're only 1-0 down. You keep yourself in the game. But Switzerland did put up a decent attempt. I agree with you with the red card. It's the tackle that I would have made by instinct, I don't think you would. I would have counted myself as being over aggressive. I would have counted it as thinking of being competitive. I don't think there was any intent from Freuler, wasn't it, to hurt the player, to injure the player, to commit a foul. I think it was just a competitive tackle, and we do have to be careful. I mean, I know the younger generation that didn't watch football, when I was playing and after I was playing, the younger generation do see that, as you said, as a modern day red card. My worry has always been taking out that competitive element of the game, the physical contact. And I've said hundreds of times before, it's a physical and a job description is that sometimes happens, that you do get bumps and bruises and knocks, stud marks down the shin, and not everything is a foul. But I agree with you that when you saw it, and I thought that could well be a red card. But I worry that we take that competitive, and players that are good at competing and winning the ball and going in for those challenges. Not every player wants to do it. Yeah, that certainly should have helped Spain. I would put it, take advantage of it.
In you, Ethan Ampadu ones for Wales. I think ones where you're trying to win the ball and get it a bit wrong and end up hurting the guy a bit is a yellow, in my view. Harry Wilson's one for Wales, where he just kicks the opponent.
Yeah,
I don't mind that being a red, because he hasn't tried to win the ball there.
Yeah, I thought that was a red.
Yeah, but ones where they're trying to do a tackle and just misjudge it or mistime it.
Split second. It's a split second sometimes.
Yeah.
But the intention isn't there to go and injure an opponent. The intention there is to win the ball back, to be competitive. And we mustn't lose that in football. We mustn't.
Yeah. Anyway, so back on with the game. Why didn't Spain then beat them comfortably?
Oh, God, do you know what? I sent you a WhatsApp message afterwards saying Luis Enrique's brain would be absolutely scrambled after this game. That was before he knew that they were playing Italy, because he tinkers, he makes changes. We're not sure why he's made those changes. Even in this game, I think Guy did well in this last game, but Alba came back, he changed Eric Garcia and brought Pau Torres back. And then all of a sudden, it's at halftime, he's taking off Sarabia and putting on Dani Olmo. Then we see Thiago ending up playing at right back. I dread to think what's going through his head at the moment, because he will need particular type of players to play against Italy. And I think he'll be forced to make changes. I think he should make changes to concede that there is something the opponents have that Spain are going to have to deal with. Can't wait to see that game, because two different types of teams, isn't it? One, Spain will want to slow the game down and keep possession. Italy want to be, rip-roaring, play at a super high tempo. And it's going to be interesting to see how each manager copes with that situation. Which one will concede in terms of changing their style of play? I think Spain have the players to do it, to change. I don't think Italy will change. I think they'll believe that their type of football should be give them the advantage over a team that wants to keep possession. So I think it'd be really interesting to see. But in terms of, taking Morata off 10 minutes into the second half, a player that you've given all the support in the world to, 54 minutes on the clock and he took him off, that was a surprising one. When you've probably only got Moreno left and you might well go to extra time. So, you're taking off a player that's leading your line that you've given all the support in the world to with possibly over an hour's football left. with no other replacement for Gerard Moreno other than an auxiliary centre forward like Ferran Torres or Yazaba will go and play up front. So some weird decisions again. They did okay. They weren't terrible. But I feel they could have been better. Pleased to see Llorente get on in something like his normal position as well. He might be one of the players that I would consider you have to play against Italy, to be honest. Yeah. Cope with the tempo, the speed that they play at. Instead of going the other way.
Instead of Koke?
I would go instead of Pedri.
Yeah. Fair enough, yeah.
I would go with Busquets, Koke and Llorente midfield. I think that experience, all-round power, not with Busquets running up and down and getting forward, but he's Busquets plays. That's a given. His experience in particular and his quality on the ball. And I would go with Koke and Llorente alongside him to up the tempo in the midfield, up the strength, and try and match the Italians because they are phenomenal in terms of the tempo of their game. So it'd be interesting to see what he does. I mean, Adama Traore is another one that you thought, he's gone to the back of the queue again. He could give them something different as well. Sarabia just, been playing well in half a game and taken off. Dani Olmo came on and did okay, but nothing brilliant. I probably wasn't alone from, people who listen to this podcast thinking when it went to penalties and Oyarzabal gets the last one, thinking, I nearly tweeted, I thought, don't jinx it. If I was going to pick anyone from that Spain squad to take a penalty to win a game of football, it would be him. So it wasn't a surprise that he was the one to take the winning penalty and slot it home so coolly. But Switzerland were favourites, weren't they, when it went to penalties? And yet completely messed it up.
Overthought it, didn't they, Switzerland? Through a penalty shootout before, because... I don't know if you heard this distinction, the goalkeeper independent, goalkeeper dependent, basically. Penalties are, one's where you look at the goalkeeper or one's where you just smash it where you want to smash it.
Yep.
And goalkeeper independent penalties have been doing a lot better. Partly, I think, because they're policing the feet on the line, aren't they? So goalkeepers are not, a couple of years
Six
ago.
Yard
they
box.
Were, honestly, they were, weren't they? Not so long back. But Switzerland's couple of their players, like Scher, who'd scored against France, suddenly did this awful thing. And Unai Simon, I know you weren't convinced by him, but to be fair, he delivered in that shootout, didn't he?
Yeah. And I haven't said he's a bad goalkeeper. I just don't think he's ready. He's been elevated quicker than he has.
Yeah.
And he did well to hold his nerve and wait, rather than we see. It's quite frustrating when you watch goalkeepers continually diving the wrong way before the ball's kicked, isn't it?
His technique is quite good, actually, because he does that dancing up and down. He arrives back in the middle.
Edges one side, yes, exactly.
But he's nicely set by the time the player gets to take the penalty. So you're not in this sort of... Sometimes, I think, when the goalkeeper sets too early, you're tempted and you want to move. You sort of think you should do something. And then that's when you see them diving out of the way and he just slots it the other way. So it'd be...
It's just pure guesswork, that is, isn't it, from the goalkeeper?
Yeah. Yeah,
and it looks a great penalty if it goes on the opposite side and you've sent the goalkeeper the wrong way, but sometimes it's just purely down to the goalkeeper having wrong information or guessing and going the wrong way.
What did you make of Pedri being subbed 120 minutes? So obviously it didn't work because Rodri missed the penalty.
Rodri missed. I was surprised when Rodri was one and the commentary said he's an expert penalty taker. And I can't remember him being in front of the queue at City. I think City have had their problems with penalties, and I think he might have taken one. That was a surprising one. And as you said, Rodri came on and missed. So, but it was quite strange because Switzerland against France, all their penalties were emphatic, weren't they? Pick their spot. And in this one, we had the stutter run up and looking at the goalkeeper and over the crossbar, the two saves by Unai Simon. So it was a weird scenario for a team that should have been full of confidence, having done all that work to get to penalties with 10 men, to then blow it by, as you said, overthinking it. I say trying to be too clever and perhaps that little bit of overconfidence. With 1-1 on penalties, I'll do this run up and stutter and wait for the goalkeeper to move and not take my normal penalty. So that was a failing from Switzerland's point of view. But for Spain, I think it's imperative. I just cannot imagine what Luis Enrique's thinking is going into this game now, because it's been so different throughout the games. The only thing that's been consistent is the 4-3-3. And yesterday, you could argue with there'd have been an ideal opportunity to play Moreno. That was the first time in the competition he's played up front. The rest of the time, he's played wide. With 10 men, if Morata had still been on, you could have played the pair of them together up there, and Moreno drift slightly wider and have a, you know, a twin strike force with two players capable of scoring goals. But as it was, it ended up just Moreno, and then, you know, other subs coming on that you wasn't really sure of, you know, what the intention was. Nothing changed in terms of the shape of the team. So I think there's just when you think it was great footage of Luis Enrique in Spain on the television when I was there. They photoshopped his head on someone's body, and it was almost, it was kind of like he was strutting down the street, John Travolta style from Saturday Night Fever, Staying Alive, and everyone was sort of in the street clapping and whistling. It was a cartoonish sort of thing, because they thought that, you know, after having so much criticism, because he's doing things his own way, almost doing the opposite to what everybody else would do, that has he won over the Spanish public? And it was 50-50. They still weren't convinced. And I think now that, you know, he's gone back into sort of negative territory where it's a little bit of a mess, which it ended up with at the end of the game yesterday. As you said, Thiago came on and then was already on 10 seconds and was looking to the bench and asking for instruction or two. Where do you want me? You know, I know there was only, you know, but he came on a couple of minutes left in the game. No, 7 minutes left. 113th minute, 7 minutes plus added on time. And he came on and then looked at the bench and was going, where? And he was like, but who's there? And kind of played in this sort of right back position. So it finished untidy. So he's got to start from square one again, I'm afraid.
Right. Let me remind you that there is a Patreon, a Patreon deal on at the moment. So patreon.com/LTEL. We've had a couple of new people sign up, so please do. There's a reduced rate. So you can join in, you can support the podcast, keep us going, and we do some, we haven't done any for a couple of weeks, actually, a dedicated Patreon coverage, but we've got some stuff planned soon.
We need passenger locator forms and proof of a negative COVID test as well.
Just your money. Right. So talking of La Liga, where we don't know whether La Liga will have Lionel Messi in it, presumably in all, it's a nightmare for all the promotional stuff that you're doing for La Liga TV, isn't it? Do you put Messi in everything or not?
Shh, don't mention it.
and then you suddenly, we'll just superimpose his head on top of Soldado or something at the last minute.
We did last season in the summer, similar thing from home on Skype. Mm. And we had two versions of who we thought would be top scorer. Right. And one with Messi and one without. So basically everybody answered Messi, and then without Messi, everyone answered Benzema.
So we've all sort of slipped under the radar this time. It was sort of front page news last time when he was out of contract. And this time around, I think the assumption was that he would sign again. And then it's we've got this far. It would seem that there is some issue with whether the wage structure is legal or not, even though he was already part of the wage structure, which is what I think surprised me. I thought it might be the only place he could sign because he's already written into the wage budget. But apparently there is a problem. And so they're talking about deferring the wages. You know, please don't offer me a job on this basis, anybody. It's like, we'll sort you out later. Yeah. It's not good, is it? It's another untidy, messy situation that Barca are in.
Yeah, and there seems to be an acceptance that it's going to be done. Hmm. Messi seems quite relaxed about it. Yeah. Barcelona seemed quite relaxed about it. There's very little talk of anywhere else, although yesterday, because it was the day his contract ended, that PSG have made an offer, which I expected them to. I'm sure they've got plenty of room on their financial fair play system to bring in.
They can do what they like.
So, but it seems quite relaxed. It doesn't seem to be a huge concern out in Barcelona that Messi isn't going to be there next season. But it needs resolving. I mean, you joked about being unemployed and all that stuff, but it's something that does need. I mean, he's playing for Argentina at the moment, and God forbid he would pick up a bad injury. So from his point of view, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute, of course, I'm not stupid enough to suggest that money is an issue with Messi in terms of securing his financial future. But what if he was to pick up a...
Yeah, what if he does a hamstring
injury?
And he's out for 3 months.
What if he has cruciate knee ligament injury?
Yeah, or so it doesn't have to be that bad. What if he gets a niggly ankle injury and the doctor, and you think, well, so is he out for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months? We don't know. Do you start paying him millions a week on that basis when you know he's not going to be playing?
Big issue. That's the sort of worrying serious side of it. But as I said, Barcelona, it seems in Spain, it seems to be quite relaxed that Messi is, they're just trying to sort it out. I believe there's a meeting between Laporte and Tebas to try and resolve the allocation of finances that Barcelona can put towards his wages. Now that if they're having a meeting with Tebas, it tells you that Barcelona are asking La Liga for help because it's not any good for Barcelona. It's good for La Liga to Messi in La Liga. So.
Okay, for Tebas and La Liga's marketing, and for us and for La Liga TV.
And Barcelona.
Real Madrid, are they delighted? do they want Messi to... let's shift the rules around for Barcelona to be able to sign the world's best ever player.
If they do, then you know what Real Madrid are going to do.
Yeah, and then Atletico Madrid and Sevilla and everybody else. Why do Barcelona get different rules?
Exactly. But I know, so that'd be interesting to see how that works out. But you mentioned Ramos.
Ramos.
The footage, I'm sure it's on social media, but it was on television out there of him working out in his back garden. Pretty decent sized back garden, it appears to be, as you'd imagine, but a great big sandpit that he was running up and down like a lunatic in them in shuttle runs. Then it showed him doing weights. I think he had 60K on a barbell across his shoulder and was doing squats. And he struggled on the last one. I thought, I would have edited that out if I were you. it's a significant weight for a footballer. He was trying to prove his knees are strong and he was doing all that to convince people to offer him a 2-year deal. I think he's worth a 2-year deal. I think he was worth a 2-year deal at Real Madrid. I don't know the salary, that's an issue, of course. But I think that despite the fact he missed a lot of playing time last year, I think that he's still, when you see Thiago Silva at 36, doing what he did at Chelsea last year, the difference he made to their defence with his experience and the fact that he was, you could ease him through and you didn't have to play him in every game and he did pick up one or two injuries, but his value was there. I think at 35, Ramos is worth a 2-year deal somewhere. What he doesn't want, what he's trying to avoid, I understand, is going through all this again next year. And every year for the rest of his rest of his career that you're playing, you come to the last 3 months of the season and you haven't got a deal for next year and you're thinking, well, am I going to be here? Am I going to be there? How much do I commit myself into every challenge? I want to be fit for next season, make sure I'm playing somewhere else. So he just wants a 2-year deal. So he's got to be realistic with his salary terms. And I'm sure he'll get a 2-year deal. And it does appear PSG are favourites at the moment.
And Roberto Soldado has got a 2-year deal as well.
And a €500,000 buyout clause. 2-year deal at Levante.
Yeah.
And we were just quickly looking around. He did it right last year at Granada, didn't he? He was used sparingly. Him and Jorge Molina, between the pair of them. Soldado was the younger of the two strikers. And Levante got Roger Marti and Sergio Leon, who's 32, I think we read. Perhaps they don't feel Sergio Leon's quite ready at 32 to play on a regular basis and lead the line for Levante. But again, if he's used sparingly, I'm surprised at a 2-year deal, I must be honest.
Because good 36 players...
36 now, 2-year deals at 38.
Good players in their prime don't get 2-year deals at the bottom end of La Liga, do they?
Managers don't.
Yeah.
They get 1-year deals, and Soldado's got a 2-year deal, so it's a fair play to him. And it'd be interesting to see him playing for Levante next season.
João Félix having an ankle operation, which sort of makes sense because he hasn't looked full of zip and beans, has he, recently. Maybe Ronaldo did beat him up in the dressing room after, as advocated by Roy Keane.
Yeah, I think they said he'd be fit for the start of the season, so it's quite a minor ankle surgery. And hopefully we see him, you know, back to his very best.
Yeah.
A little bit harsh, maybe, the criticism on him, because he wasn't playing on a regular basis at Atletico. Now, you can argue that if he was playing at his best, he would have been. But he did have one or two injury issues in the second half of the season, which gave Correa the chance. And he grabbed it, didn't he, Correa? I mean, he's got some vital goals and proved to be a good partner for Luis Suarez. So it's Atletico. At this stage, I'm looking at it already. I'm thinking Atletico are favourites again next season. I know we've got a little bit of time to go before the transfer window closes and before the season starts, but the rest are playing catch-up, I think. I think Atletico haven't got to do too much. You know, they've got the same manager. They're pretty much the same group of players, all apart from Suarez, good age as well. And I actually think Atletico will bring in one or two. So I think they're the team to chase at the moment. So if you were asking me now my favourites for next season, I'd say at this stage Atletico already, and João Félix, if he does get better, does improve, it makes him even stronger.
Yeah, we will. We'll do lots of La Liga preview stuff probably a month from now because there's a lot of transfer. Well, we'll see how much transfer business there is to be done. Might not be that much to be done. But if it does happen, we will be covering it here. We'll be back with more podcasts. Don't forget to join in the Patreon as well. Patreon.com/LTEL. Thank you to all of the Patreons who keep us going. And thank you to everybody who is listening. We'll see you again soon.